This is TWiT.
It is time for an update, as I said, on the current state of facial recognition, both here in the U.S. and abroad. And it starts with an excellent new article from Dave Gershgorn over at 10, a Medium publication. Dave, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to get you back. So let's talk about there are kind of a lot of different acronyms that we've got in this article, and I kind of want to break things down so that folks understand what's going on here, so that we can talk about kind of this company itself, Yitu Technology, and I'm sure you'll pronounce it better than I do there, as well as the entity list, and then the NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. So can we just do sort of a rundown of these three entities to talk about what they are?
Totally. So the one to start with is NIST. So NIST, since about the year 2000, has been doing this test on facial recognition algorithms. It's tried to inspire the industry to make better algorithms. So it's run this little competition. And basically, the competition is that submit your algorithms to us. We'll see which one is the best, and we'll have a leaderboard. Pretty standard type competition as far as tech goes. Then, as you wade more into U.S. sanctions, there's the Bureau of Industry and Security. That's actually not in the article because it's a little bit deep. But what you need to know is that these two organizations are both a part of the U.S. Department of Commerce. So you've got the test, and then you've got the Bureau of Industry and Security, and they are the part of the Department of Commerce that deals with certain sanctions. So in the 90s, there was this list called the Entity List, and it was meant to stop the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. So basically, if you were suspected of having a dangerous material, you would be put on this list. It was seen as a sanction. It's a public condemnation. And also, U.S. companies need a special permit to do business with you. So it's seen as a pretty sizable slap on the wrist. So now we're putting these two things together. So you have NIST, which is doing this facial recognition competition, which in the last 20 years has grown to be enormous. It's the gold standard for facial recognition competitions in the world. And a lot of companies use it as marketing. So it's they got number one. They were in the top five. They were, scored well on it. But as tensions between the U.S. and China have escalated, you start seeing the U.S. government start to put sanctions on China, including for human rights abuses in Xinjiang, which is territory, the autonomous territory within China, home to Uyghurs, the Muslim ethnic minority. And there have been reports of them being put in re-education camps, internment camps, and it's estimated that more than 1 million Uyghurs are in these camps. So the Bureau of Industry and Security, part of the Department of Commerce, put a bunch of Chinese companies on this list, saying that they were perpetrating these human rights abuses. They were allowing video surveillance for Uyghurs. They had facial recognition that was specifically meant to identify Uyghurs. And then they put them on this list. And now companies like Megvii, which is one of China's largest facial recognition companies, was actually planning to IPO in the U.S. I believe it was in the U.S. But that didn't happen. And there's a lot of rumors that this is due to being put on this list. And Megvii has protested and wants to get off the list. So while all of this has been happening, it's been business as usual at NIST. NIST is still ranking and auditing and giving free marketing to these companies that are perpetrating human rights abuses. So the Department of Commerce is kind of has this double standard right now of both auditing and validating these tests or these algorithms while condemning them on the other hand. So it's one of those things where it's a multifaceted story, but at the heart of it, there's this conflict where you have the same organization condemning and approving the same kind of action.
Right. Yeah. So you've clearly drawn attention to this in publishing this article, but have either of these organizations addressed this specific issue here that we've got? Surely they have to know that this company is using the sort of gold seal from one of our organizations as a marketing tool. Is there any talk about why this is happening, or have they tried to give some excuse for why these things are both allowed to happen?
So NIST didn't get back to me. They said that they were working on something and then weren't able to turn anything around. But what political scientists have said is that it might be in NIST's best interest to continue doing this because there's an element of transparency and understanding what China is doing with facial recognition. I mean, obviously, companies aren't compelled to send their best facial recognition algorithms over if they want to keep some, you know, internal secrets or whatever. But some people suggest, like Samuel Curtis, who I spoke to for the story, that, you know, the price of the letting Chinese companies use this as marketing might be small compared to the competitive advantage that the U.S. has in just knowing what kind of facial recognition Chinese companies have.
So, okay, that's interesting because the benefit then, whenever you originally had stated this, what I thought you were saying was that it's good for the U.S. to sort of know what technology is being used for the sake of sort of understanding, you know, a potential adversaries. But instead, it's more about being aware of technologies for the sake of competition. So less a protection and human rights interest and more a matter of making sure that you are competing at the same level?
I think it's both. I think it's definitely the human rights. And I mean, I think that like, so there are a few things. So I think that both of your points are completely like on the nose. I think that it's definitely a human rights thing. It's definitely an accuracy thing and competition. It's also that NIST has been doing tests on race and gender and inclusivity in these algorithms. And by having Chinese companies compete, it kind of brings them into the same conversation as we're having in the US, which is should facial recognition algorithms be deployed if they don't work on a diversity of skin tones? And I mean, the counter argument to that is that like maybe you're just helping them make a better Uyghur detector, you know? It's like, right. So I think there are so many questions that are still out there about this. And I think that the article that I tried to write was basically illuminating this conflict in the first place and then, you know, acknowledging that there are still a lot of open questions about whether this is actually a problem or whether it's something that's somewhat calculated from the U.S. government. We just don't know.
Gotcha. Now, how popular – because – one of the things that I always find, and I think that you have brought this up before, is that the big companies, when it comes to facial recognition, are not often companies that we know. We think about Amazon and the Ring doorbell as one, but that's a small player in a much bigger universe. And so it makes me wonder, you know, how much is this technology being used in China? Is this a really popular technology? The technology from Yitu. I'm curious about that specifically. Is this something that, at least in China, is a very popular program, and therefore a sanction does have a bigger effect versus sanctioning something that is maybe not used as much? Does that make sense?
It does, and I think that the companies that the U.S. have sanctioned are the biggest players in China. There's SenseTime, enormous. Yitu Technologies is in 1,500 banks, a specific branch of banks in China that is incredibly popular. So it's not like these are small companies that no one's ever heard of. These are like considered among the AI giants of China. Gotcha. So They're definitely big. I mean, it kind of, it depends how effective these this blacklist is. It kind of depends from company to company, because some of them don't necessarily rely as much on U.S. goods or U.S. IP, which is really what the blacklist targets. So it's kind of a company by company thing. But calling out these specific companies is definitely a big, you know, shot across the bow. And it happened days, I believe, before trade negotiations last year. So, I mean, it's undoubtedly seen as a political act.